Hey, welcome back to another episode of E-commerce on Tap, brought to you by Sourcify. My name is Nathan, and today we have Nate. Nate joins us from websiteclosers.com. He knows the ins and outs of selling your business. Nate, thanks so much for coming on.
You got it, man. I appreciate being here.
But yeah. Nate, I want to learn your story real quick. Give us the quick 30-second rundown of how you really ended up in this position to help people buy and sell businesses, and I want to just get your backstory.
Yeah, I was an e-commerce entrepreneur, much like your clients are. I was looking to buy a supplement company, and it didn't pass due diligence, the review phase, where make sure that it is what it says it is. And I was just really curious about selling, in this case, it was vitamins and supplements around the world. I'd had a career in real estate and developing real estate projects, and I wanted to get something that was more expansive and more scalable. Going through that process of looking at buying an e-commerce supplement company, I was really inspired to go ahead and launch one, even though what I was trying to buy wasn't going to fit the bill.
Got it.
I started the process of looking for contract manufacturers and private label manufacturers and found some. And before I knew it, it took about 8 or 9 months before we hit our stride, but using some affiliate networks, I was able to scale the company to over $1 million a month in sales, which continued for years until I ended up selling some software. Actually, I built, ended up selling software as opposed to my actual e-commerce brand. Yeah. I wanted to sell the e-commerce brands. Actually, I take that back. I didn't really know what the market was for e-commerce brands. This was like 2017, 2018. And by then, e-commerce brands, they sell really well when they're growing, not so great when they're declining. And my business was going through, and this is very common for e-commerce brands, they go through ups and downs. And I was on the downswing and going through some life changes and stuff and ended up getting divorced and moving and some other things. And I had taken my focus off the business and was focusing more on myself. But I sold my software technology and transitioned into business brokering, and that was my real calling. I love selling stuff direct to consumers, but I love even more helping others, and going through the M&A process is like the highlight of entrepreneurship.
So you mentioned one thing that a lot of people talk about right now in the e-commerce world is, are we in a recession? Are we heading into a recession? How do you navigate selling a business during a recession? You mentioned just briefly that it's a bad time to sell when it's heading down, and a lot of e-commerce businesses grew like crazy the past 3 years because they had that kind of COVID e-commerce tick. And now growth has, for a lot of companies, slowed. And so I guess I'm curious what you're seeing from the M&A side of these brands.
We're still seeing a ton of activity. And here's how we're positioning companies. If they're older than the pandemic, so if they've been around 2017, 18, 19, then what we're doing is we're taking their sales, they're both the profit and the gross sales from 2019 and 2020, and we're comparing them to 2022. Mm-hmm. And we're essentially keying that bubble, that spike for 2020 and 2021, a lot of e-commerce brands had. And so if your 2022 end of year profit and revenue is higher than your 2019, then we're good to go. We've got buyers. And we've got a ton of buyers out there still looking for deals. One of the things that's awesome about recessions is mergers and acquisitions is mostly recession proof. In fact, when times get tough and there's less investment options like crypto and the stock market, which if it's skyrocketing, people will put their money into those. But when things are a little tough, a lot of institutional investors and professional business acquirers will go back to the fundamentals. How did they make money? Entrepreneurship. How are they going to do it again? They're going to buy something. They're not going to build something. They're far too deep into the universe of entrepreneurship to want to go back to the beginning and grind all over again. So we do need great e-commerce companies to put on the marketplace. We've got way more buyers than we've got sellers right now.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, one question that comes up as we talk to a lot of e-commerce founders is when they go to sell their business, what are like the top three items that kill a deal? Like, I think a lot of people, when they go about selling their business, are scared to share some of the very nitpicky details. And I think really the key to having a smooth deal is being as transparent as possible. But top of mind, what are top three items that you've seen kill a deal?
Yeah, absolutely. Transparency is a big one. It all starts with the financials. The more transparent and simple and clear the income statement and the balance sheet are, the more that conveys a sense of trust and credibility to the buyer. Biggest factors that kill a deal, it's actually what we talked about a moment ago. The declining, if your business is declining and it's in a tailspin, we can't sell it. If it's if it's stable, we're good to go. If it's up over 2019, we're good to go. But yeah, declining profits, the worst, biggest factor that'll kill a deal. And if that's happening when we're going through the selling process, if it's starting to decline, that will usually kill the deal. Working with inexperienced deal attorneys. So just like in real estate, you've got attorneys involved. We've got attorneys drafting the actual documents that assign the assets. Inexperienced deal attorneys kill deals all the time. And then another one, your personality. If you're generally disagreeable or unlikable, it's tough love. But yeah, if you're a jerk, it's going to be really hard to sell your company. Yeah, those are probably the top four things. Your financials, the decline in profitability, working with an inexperienced deal attorney, and being just unlikable.
How important do you think an acquisition is for the acquirer to have the founder stay on? And does that kind of fluctuate depending on the company size? If you're selling $1 million e-commerce brand versus a $10 million versus a $50 million brand, I would assume, and I'm not really sure, but the bigger your brand, the more likely that acquirer is going to want the founder to stay on for a year, the golden handcuffs, right?
Yeah, it does depend on how you've set the company up. If you're critical to the company's success, you're going to have to be around for a while, at least a year, whether it's small or large. Big transactions, if it's a buyer who's like a private equity firm and they don't have an operation staff, which is quite frequent, the over $10 million transactions, they're funded by financial or institutional buyers and they don't have a team to run the business. If that's the case, then it's pretty critical. You're going to need to be around for a while. If you've done a great job of delegating and outsourcing yourself and you're just as an operator, you're just like handling strategy, then you're not going to have to do any more work than what you're doing right now. And that's really the case in all of these transactions. Whatever you're doing the 3 months leading up to the sale is probably what you're going to have to do for the 3 months after the sale for a transition period. Right. And then if your business is really complicated or you're handling or micromanaging the marketing of it and the ordering of it, product launches of it, you need to start thinking about how to have somebody else start picking up the slack on that, or you're going to be stuck doing it for a while.
So it sounds like the best way to avoid the golden handcuff scenario is to delegate as much as you can in your business before you start the acquisition process. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Or just be prepared that for 3 to 12 months after, you're going to have to be doing that, because we'll have a number of buyers that will buy it if you're an owner operator and you're doing the ins and the outs every day, and they may take over doing that, but you're going to have to delegate to them. You're going to have to teach them.
Got it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm curious too, did you follow the kind of aggregator space in the Amazon ecosystem in terms of Thrasio and Moonshot Brands and all these other aggregators? How did you see that increase the multiples that these Amazon e-commerce brands were selling for? And then where is that space at right now?
Yeah, so we sold a lot of companies to Thrasio and those aggregators. They definitely increased the multiple at the time. Many of them were looking for, like, specifically Amazon FBA companies. Later on, they started opening up and looking for Shopify stores and that sort of thing. And for those specific niches, it definitely accelerated the multiple. You could see almost as much as an additional 1x trailing 12 months as a multiple. So if your business is making $1 million, the average now we're seeing on our marketplace is 3.5 to 4.5 times multiple. So $1 million business that's growing might be worth 3.5 to 4.5 million. During that greater bubble and the pandemic, we'd see it, it'd be more like 4 to 5. So you might be seeing that same $1 million company worth being worth $4 million to $5 million. And but there's still a lot of activity, and we're seeing those larger deals still happening and the larger multiples happening, but they're not as much cash up front at closing. It might have some other structure or seller finance or some equity or something on the back end.
Yeah. Are most deals, do they have some type of earnout? And then what's common practice with earnouts? And are earnouts guaranteed? Let's say I were to sell my business and roll 25% of my equity into the deal. I guess hopefully they resell it and I earn more in the future, or if there's an earnout portion of that 25%, is that guaranteed? What's the most common practice with that?
Yeah, so after the actual closing, there's three different common post-acquisition methods for compensating the seller. You've mentioned earnouts, you mentioned equity. There's also rev shares and seller financing. So I put rev share and earnouts the same sort of thing. So let me start at the top and what's the most guaranteed? And let me state, none of them are guaranteed. The only thing that's guaranteed is cash at closing. However, the number of transactions we've seen, we've done thousands of transactions that are all cash at closing, less than 1%. So for the 99% of businesses selling, there's going to be some component of the transaction that's going to be paid after closing. And the best one right now, what we're seeing, is seller finance. A seller financed component of the transaction means you get a promissory note, very similar to real estate. And sometimes we'll see people that are selling a $500,000 house. The buyer may get $300,000 from a first mortgage, and then the seller may pick up the slack and sell another $100,000 as a note over 10 years, and then the buyer is only coming up with $100,000. Right. We're seeing things like that. It used to be in the earlier days of real estate, like in the in the 1950s through 80s, there weren't a lot of 100%. There weren't any 100% financing options back then. So sellers pick up the slack there. Works the same way here. It's usually a 3 to 10 year note. There might be a balloon payment somewhere in there, so you get paid off in 3 to 5 years. You're probably doing something at a lower interest rate than what they're getting from the SBA or some other finance places. So it might be between 4% and 6% interest rate, and you get paid like clockwork. As long as a business is operating and it's cash flowing, you're getting payments. It could be monthly, quarterly, or annually. That's the most guaranteed, because you can get what's called a UCC-1 on the business. So it's like a lien, like a mortgage on the business. So if something were to happen, that's some way to collect potentially back the rights of the business. The second best option is equity. If you sell, let's just use another example, it's a $1 million business, and you sell 70% of it in cash at closing, and you retain 30% equity, which is a structure happens quite common right now. So you'll get $700,000 in cash at closing, and you'll hold $300,000 as equity. And we can set up, there's some methods that we can use for you to have an option to sell that other 30% at some point in time at your discretion. It might be 3 years or 5 years down the road. So you're not having to tag along forever in case somebody doesn't resell. They might be able to go get some more financing and pay you off in 3 to 5 years. That's a great option too, when you're essentially guaranteed equity in the business. That's another great method. And then last and probably least is earnouts and rev shares. Earnouts, the business usually has to continue performing at its current level, although we're negotiating some now where the business can even soften slightly. It could dip a little bit and you can still get your earnout. And another way is to flip that into a rev share. So if the business grows, or if it grows more than it has been under your ownership, you get 10, 15, 20, 25% of that increase.
Got it.
None of that's guaranteed, though. The business has to perform.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm curious, too, because right now, I feel like a lot of founders are facing a bit of burnout, right? Because they saw so much growth the past 3 years, and they were like, oh, this is easy, everything's good. And then all of a sudden, hard times hit, right? And what advice do you have for those founders that are facing burnout? And a lot of them, I guess there's two scenarios, right? A founder that's bootstrapped or majorly bootstrapped, and they've built this themselves, and then a founder that raised capital in the bull market and they're overcapitalized and revenue growth hasn't kept up, and now they're in a situation where they have a lot of money in the bank, but revenue's not growing at the tick that their investors expect, and now they're in a dicey situation where, what do I do with this money in the bank? What's my options here?
Yeah, that's a tough situation. I've sat in those, stood in those shoes. I've sat in that chair before. I've had businesses that were overcapitalized, and there's too much money invested, not enough money coming in the door. So I had more money going out than coming in, and I shut them down. I've also had businesses that were just like on the edge, and I pushed through. I grinded it out and was able to, like a phoenix, rise. And then I've had other businesses where there was an exit possibility, and I went ahead and exited. It's tough when you're burnt out. And a lot of my clients will come to me when they're bored or they're burnt out or they have a new passion for something else. And usually when they approach me looking to sell, that desire and that mental outlook will determine the trajectory of the business. If you're not in like a positive mental space, I see time and time again, those businesses tend to suffer. The best time to sell is when you don't need to, when things are easy, when you're making money hand over fist, and you don't even, you don't even really want to sell. That's the best time to sell.
Yeah.
The most challenging time to sell is when you need to get out, when you need some money to pay off some investors. If it's declining, unfortunately, not many buyers want those kind of businesses, because the buyer's thinking, wait a second, if the person who founded this can't turn this thing around, how could I? So most buyers will tend to take a step back and say, let's wait and see how things go, and let's talk later. So You really have to make that call yourself, and it's a painful one. I've been there. I've shut things down, and I've sold stuff too. It can go either way. Sometimes it's like a real thin line between exiting and bankruptcy. And even one of my largest clients, we sold their business for $25 million. He wrote the foreword to my book, Maximum Exit, and he commented that during the period of time we were engaged to sell his business, he felt like he was teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. And it's not uncommon for these e-commerce businesses because the cash flow is, you're having massive outlays into inventory and marketing, and things can swing real fast.
E-commerce is so cash flow reliant that it's always a challenge in some ways to say, do I have enough to pay for a new order of product? As we wrap up, I want to learn, how does website closers work with business owners that are looking to sell? What's the structure? Is there upfront costs, or just how does it work?
Absolutely. We're like a real estate brokerage in the sense that we're performance only. So until the transaction closes and our clients get a wire, we don't get paid either. No retainers, no monthly fees. There's none of that. And because of that too, we will only accept listings that we think will sell. So I'll spend some time up front doing a free consultation. I'll do a business valuation for prospective sellers. I'll tell them their trading range looks like, where I would think they would sell, what kind of buyers would be interested in them, what kind of structures they would see. We go through some scenarios of what they could expect to cash out. And if it's a mutual interview, I'm interviewing them to see if their business is the right fit. They're interviewing me to see if I'm the right fit. And if we all agree, then we get listed. I get the business marketed. I vet all the buyers. I create the offering memorandum. It's like some people call it a prospectus or a SEM. I do all of that work up front, no cost associated to it. We're both investing our time and energy into the transaction. And then if things go swimmingly, I'll be able to suss up a couple of LOIs. Sometimes we've got some bidding action. We've got several businesses that do really well. They might have multiple buyers that are vying for it. And we'll pick the best one. We'll work together to make sure the transaction gets done and help you get through due diligence, protect yourself. We do sometimes a little bit of, have some suggestions and point to some resources for tax strategies and for some other stuff. So you make sure to minimize the amount of cash in your pocket. It's all full service. It's basically white glove, concierge. I'm like your Mr. Wolf. I take care of everything for you. Until the day you get the wire, we are hip to hip.
That's great. That's cool. So if a listener wants to get in touch and ask more questions, where can they find you, Nate?
The best way is to email me, nate@websiteclosers.com. You can also go to my website, maximumexit.com. I've got a book where I've written about the 16 top questions most of my prospective clients have about the business. What's my multiple? How much is my business worth? Who are the buyers? That sort of stuff. If you email me, I could send you a free ebook as well. Would love your reviews too. That's always helpful. I'm on Amazon.
That's awesome.
I can spare you the cost of it. Just looking for some reviews.
Cool. Awesome. Nate, before we wrap up here, I've got one final question, and that's my favorite one to ask, but what's one question that I didn't ask that you wish I had asked that you want to answer? So ask the question, listeners, and then give us your answer.
Yeah. So the question is, Nate, if I'm not ready to exit, what's a way that I could capitalize on this situation if I know somebody? And we do a bunch of referrals. Would love your referral. Happy to pay. And this goes for you as the host of your podcast, but for any of your listeners. One of the things that we find, it's challenging to meet and talk with and network with e-commerce founders. So if you've got a buddy that's doing well and he's been thinking about an exit, happy to take a referral from you. I'll pay you 10% of the commissions that we make for a $2 million deal that ends up being typically a 10% engagement agreement. So it's a $200,000 commission and $20,000 to the referral agent. So it's big bucks. I paid tens of thousands. Actually, I paid over $100,000 just last year to one particular source, and just out there beating the streets. I'd be happy to compensate anybody that looks upon us with their favor, and we'll make it happen.
Nice. Awesome. Nate, thanks so much for coming on E-commerce on Tap. We really appreciate you.
Thanks, David.